Switch on my mic. There you go. Good afternoon. Hello. Thank you. My name is AJ. I am the product manager, and I have been working on security, Microsoft client, and security technologies, specifically on endpoint protection. They recently added marketing to my title, so now I'm a product marketing manager. And the real reason Mark wanted me to come here was to show how endpoint protection is simplified, and even a marketing person can do it as well. So I'm here to show that and help Mark. This is Mark.
Hi, Mark Florida. I'm with the configuration manager team. AJ also can help you with any licensing questions and how all that's structured, because I don't have a clue.
Oh, sure. All right, so as you may have guessed from the title, we are here to talk about System Center 2012 endpoint protection. We want to provide you an overview of what's new in endpoint protection, how we have built from the earlier version of forefront endpoint protection in this new 2012 endpoint protection. And then we'll show you some demos on the things that we have improved, as well as talk about the client side of changes and improvements. Sound good? Okay. How many of you are running forefront endpoint protection today? Quite a few. And how many of you are running forefront client security? A few, okay. All right, good to know. How many of you are already running System Center 2012 endpoint protection? Anyone? Oh, cool. All right, so before we go into System Center 2012 endpoint protection and what is new in that release, let me talk about the evolution of malware and set some context on where we as Microsoft are going and how we think about the latest threats that you guys are facing. So first off, setting context, we have come a long way. As you can see here, in 1991, we just had 1,000 known threats. In 2001, we had 60,000 known threats. And this is from the telemetry that we, Microsoft, get from all the clients that we serve, right? So we have the latest telemetry, we have the latest data. And today, as you already know, millions and millions of malware and newer threats are being generated and are focused on new technologies, putting your resources at risk. And so what we wanted to do, the way we think about malware and the way we think about providing protection to malware, obviously is at multiple levels. So let me talk about those personas at different levels of who are targeting your resources today. So there are things that are done at a curiosity level, college kids trying to understand or, you know, trying to attack some websites. You have hobbyist hackers or some experts doing it for personal fame, and you have malware authors, a trend that I will talk about in a bit. Then you have data theft, information theft, targeted at corporate resources. And finally, you have cyber warfare. These things are in news recently, you know, cyber warfare, attacking different governments, spying kind of missions using software viruses, malware, software threats. So the fastest growing segment that we have seen is really about data theft, information theft, targeting drive-by downloads, targeting new social engines, like Facebook or other social engines that are being targeted. And then we also have another trend that is developing that we have seen, the trend about experts who are creating malware and treating it as commodity. So anybody can go in and buy those type of malware threats and then create thousands and thousands of spy bots and target your network or your enterprise. So those are the trends that we see. And based on those trends, Microsoft is developing strategy to provide end-to-end protection for your clients. So with that, I wanted to go and talk about System Center 2012 endpoint protection. and how that will help you have some policy and governance against the trends that you just saw. So first of all, System-Centered Critical Endpoint Protection, a big name, is the next release of Forefront Endpoint Protection 2010. This is fully integrated with System-Centered 2012 Configuration Manager. So you'll see as we go on about the integration and how it is tightly coupled with Configuration Manager with this release. This release was made available to you 2 months ago. So those who are on Forefront Endpoint Protection and Configuration Manager 2007 can think of going, upgrading, migrating to 2012 Endpoint Protection as well. So we are going to talk about three things here. The first one is unified infrastructure, how we have integrated the infrastructure and the install and made it simpler for you guys. The second one is about simplified administration, the benefits that you get from a single console, a single management motion. And the last one is about enhanced protection, the protection engine that is behind endpoint protection. So I'm going to give it to Mark to talk about those things more.
Thanks, AJ. So when we talk about how we simplified the infrastructure, the thing to kind of take a step back and look at is it's not just about the moving parts or the parts of Configuration Manager or Endpoint Protection that's interesting. It's really looking at what it means to really protect the client. And protecting a client isn't just what you see as endpoint protection, and by that I mean like anti-malware and firewall. It's really looking at the other features that Configuration Manager has as well. Software updates as well as settings management. It's really about how can you provide a complete configuration management system, if you will, being both the parts that Endpoint Protection has and Configuration Manager has, and how can you use that to secure the aspects of the device that you're most interested in. So when we think about unified infrastructure, keep that in the back of your mind, and I'm going to kind of drill into some of the architectural changes we went into. Then I'm going to walk through what best practice would look like in terms of deploying endpoint protection, and then kind of leave it with how the client gets installed. So when you think about the FEP 2010 story, there was a lot of moving parts. There was a separate database, you ran a separate installer. If you wanted to have the console installed, you had to run that same installer and select the console option. And then if you had distributed admins, you needed to rerun that same setup. It had a lot of complexities related to it. It was literally a product that was built on top of Configuration Manager using the SDK. And with it came some complexity, not too surprising. But with Endpoint Protection 2012, it's now inside of the product. It's now been integrated into Configuration Manager 2012. And as a result, Endpoint Protection is much simpler to deploy. You don't have all those moving parts. You know, you saw like the database that was separate in FEP 10. That's just gone away. It's now native inside the Config Manager 12 database. You don't have a separate client to deploy. You don't have a separate console to deploy. We manage all of those just through native functionality with inside Configuration Manager, which I'll walk you through. The one thing that we do support and do have that is kind of new with 2012 is there's a role. There's an endpoint protection role. The whole purpose of that role is partially there for EULA because it is a separate product, but in terms of more mechanics and long-term usefulness, you install an endpoint protection client, and that client is then used for our reporting functionality. We basically translate IDs into some friendly text so you can understand the threat that has been surfaced. Rather than just seeing a number, we'll provide you with some richer information to understand how that looks. In terms of anti-malware policies, this has become much simpler. So in the past, the way this worked in FEP 10 is there was UI that made this appear different, appeared easy. You would create these anti-malware policies, and you'd have basically the same knobs and controls that you'll see in 2012. They were there in FEP 2010. The real challenge, though, with FEP 2010 is that the policy mechanism for anti-malware sat on top of software distribution. So while at the UI layer, we made it appear that it is fairly simple, just, hey, it's just a UI, and I just put in my settings, and the system goes off and works. That's all fine until you hit a problem. You know, if you run into a replication problem or you run into an underlying problem with Configuration Manager, it necessitates that the endpoint protection admin needs to understand software distribution. So it greatly sort of complexes the true life cycle of managing endpoint protection, specifically with the anti-malware feature. So to resolve this, what we did is we just natively put the policy inside Config Manager policy. What that means is you're not relying on content anymore. You have much less moving parts. You basically have the same reliable mechanism that client agent settings and Config Manager uses is the same underlying mechanism that we use for anti-malware policies. And one of the things that we don't necessarily talk directly in this one, but we do in Config Manager sessions, is we've improved client health where we've introduced remediation mechanisms and other things that have really kind of bolstered our health, if you will, of our overall ecosystem. We not only manage some health of our servers better, but we also manage the health of the client better. That's why it's much more of a reliable mechanism in 2012, not only for Config Manager policy, but now anti-malware policy, because it's running at that really low fundamental level in our product. But in terms of feature functionality, a lot of the same stuff you're used to if you've seen FEP 10 is there in FEP 12. Almost all the same controls are there. You can still be able to import, export policies. You can still do merging of policies. So from an administrative point of view, if you're moving from FEP 10 to 2012, it's not going to be a radical retrain or anything that you have to do in that area. It's very much the same administrative concepts that you have when you manage these policies. It's just more about how we end up transmitting those policies and making that work. Now, shortly we'll get to some SP1 stuff where we have changed some stuff to really kind of improve that experience, but just for the kind of GA release that we have, our general availability release we have of 2012, it's very much the same feature functionality. Software distribution. So this is critical if you're using Config Manager, Software Updates Management. If you're using Software Updates Management to deploy your signatures. So obviously the endpoint client supports a myriad of different ways to get signatures. You can either fall back to a file share, you can use WooMoo, you can also use Configuration Manager. So for our customers, Software Updates Management is one of our recommended ways of using the system to distribute signatures. The main advantage of doing that is that you can rely on the content distribution system that Configuration Manager has, and you can also rely on a very common support model for signatures. Just like how you have to manage software updates in general, like critical security patches, you can just use that same process, that same support apparatus you can use to manage your definition updates. So with Configuration Manager 2012, we implemented a feature we call automatic deployment rules. The whole goal of this is to get administrators who are using FEP 10 on top of 2007 away from having to go into WSUS and do any form of administration. Instead, what you can do is you can go into the Config Manager console, define these automatic deployment rules. And the advantage is twofold. Not only do you have a Config Manager admin using just the Config Manager console, so they don't need to worry about WSUS administration, but what it also does, unlike WSUS, is the definition files themselves will come from the distribution points. So this becomes advantageous if you have sites with low WAN bandwidth connectivity. You don't have to deploy a ton of WSUS servers. You can just rely on the same Config Manager infrastructure that you've already deployed. In terms of client setup, again, this is very similar to what I talked about with anti-malware policies. In the past, in FEP 10, this was very much a scenario that was dependent on software distribution. As a result, the person who was administering endpoint protection had to understand how software distribution worked, had to understand how content worked, had to understand a number of Config Manager mechanics that just really aren't needed. What we've done is we've changed client setup for endpoint protection to be as simple as, checking a box. Well, it's not literally checking a box. I'll show you in the demo. It's actually a drop-down, but it's just flipping a switch, and what will happen is it'll actually install the endpoint protection client for you, which I'll show you. The other kind of feature functionality that we have in FEP 10 still applies. We still do removal of third-party software, and you can see the list down there. We also have controls around suppressing notifications so that you can silently, replace the client under the covers. But again, the goal here was to just try to simplify the mechanics so you didn't have to worry about keeping these packages up to date and using software distribution. So let me cut over here to a demo, and I'll kind of walk you through what this looks like. So let me try this one more time.
There you go.
Aha, good. If anyone, AJ and his marketing mojo for anyone who attended the consumerization of IT session earlier today. Now, what I'm going to do is walk you through kind of the...
Don't look at me. I didn't do it.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do is walk you through kind of the best practices that we talk to customers about when you're setting up Endpoint Protection 2012. So what you see on the screen right here is client agent settings. And for folks who aren't familiar with Configuration Manager, this is where you define the fundamental sort of configuration of a Configuration Manager client. I'll see if I can work the word configuration into more of my sentences. So it's here that you actually enable the client. But I'm not going to do that yet. And the reason I'm not is that it's important that you cover a few other things first before you actually install the endpoint agent itself. What you want to do is you want to do really two things. You want to make sure your anti-malware policies are configured the way you want them. And the reason that's important is because when you install a client, you want them to use the policy you want. And then you also want to make sure that your signature distribution system is set up. So, you know, I'll walk you through what that looks like with software updates. So the first thing I'll do is I'll go over here to where we store policies. So what we have is a concept of a default policy. Basically, it's as the name describes. If a client hasn't been targeted with a custom policy, it'll get the default policy. The default policy is very similar to what you have seen in FEP 10. Basically, it has a number of scheduling options. You can exclude files. You can override threats and so on. You know, there isn't a whole lot new here to really kind of highlight, the differences between FEP 10 and 2012. It's just the same rich set of functionality that you might have had. So what you can do is you can not only rely on the default one, what you can also do, though, is create a custom policy. So when you create a custom policy, you can basically choose all the different options that you want. And for those who are using 2012, you might be looking at this going, hey, wait, what are you doing? You know, how come I can sort of pick different options? You know, why can I just pick sort of a slim subset here? The reason being, and this is a little complicated to describe with my words, but I'll do my best, is that in 2012 GA, we made you define a custom policy that had all the same settings as your default policy. Basically, you couldn't define a policy that just had a one-off, for example. In SP1, however, what we allow you to do is define just the thin slice of settings that differ from your default policy. So the advantage of that is that, how about this? A common scenario I hear from customers is something like scan schedule will be very consistent. So they might have hundreds of policies, but scan schedule is pretty fixed across all of them. The problem the challenge that people can run into in that area is if you ever want to change scan schedule, you got to go through and hit all those different policies. In SP1, what we now do is what we call client-side merge of policy, and what that allows you to do is define just your one thing you want to have different, or multiple things depending on your configuration, like let's say exclusions. And then that way we basically take your default policy and your custom policy. In this example, it would just be your exclusion settings, and on the client we just merge those together to get the right effect that you want to have. So just in the interest of time, let's just assume I'm going to use my default policy. Next thing to look at is software updates. So with software updates, the biggest change again with 2012 is automatic deployment rules. So what I've done here is I've created an automatic deployment rule, which is going to look at a set of criteria that you can define. So I'm just looking for product FEP 2010, and yes, I know we need to get that updated. That's coming from the publisher. And what we're able to also do is define the type of updates. So this same functionality can be used for non-endpoint scenarios as well. You know, for example, I can grab all critical updates that come out once a month. But this specific auto-deployment rule allows me to really focus just on definition updates. And by focusing just on definition updates, I can then define a unique evaluation schedule that is relevant for the type of updates that I happen to be grabbing. So here I've defined a schedule where every 8 hours I'm going to check for new definition updates, and if they get released, then I'm going to download, if they get released from the publisher, I'm going to download those and then distribute those out to my client. So with Config Manager 2012 GA, we support once a day for updates, but here is an SP1 site, so now I've dialed it down to every 8 hours to match the publishing frequency that Microsoft has. The other thing that we support is very typical with other software updates is you can define when to, you can tell when the system should apply these. I've just set this up for as soon as now. And then we have other choices around language and download settings, but that's just more of a general software updates scenario, which I'll cover in a session later today if you're interested. So as part of the automatic deployment rule too, you also define the...
There's a question.
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, you can end up making the deployment what we call available if you want to, so you don't even have to make it something that's enforced, or you can do like, I don't know if you're familiar with Config Manager non-endpoint scenarios, but you can do the same things where you basically can say, I'd like an enforcement deadline to occur 7 days from today. That way they initially show up as available, and it's really kind of a fake available because in 7 days they'll be enforced. Yep, no problem. So also with these automatic deployment rules, what you do is you define a collection that you want to target. So I had defined it as just all systems. So now what the system has is it has an anti-malware policy I'm comfortable with. It also has automatic deployment rules that are up to date. So now I feel confident that when I install my endpoint client, it will install and actually use the settings that I care about. So what I've done here is I've created a custom client agent setting. And this is where I've selected that I want this custom agent or this custom client agent setting to be just for endpoint protection. So in this, your ability to manage or the thing that you need to do in order to manage these devices for endpoint protection is really as simple as changing this to a yes. Once you change this to a yes, that's really all you need to do. We just drive a number of defaults and you hit OK. What will happen is at the next machine polling interval, it'll grab policy, and it will then go off and install the endpoint client for you. If you want, you can tune a number of options here. You can kind of choose, you know, how you want to be able to get software updates from and some more advanced options. But the key message here is you don't have to rely on software distribution anymore, natively in the product, so actually deploying the agent is just as simple as, you know, checking a box. And then troubleshooting any client issues and things like that all come back down to some in-console monitoring, which AJ will get into, and then also our client health improvements have hopefully made a lot of the support that you need to perform here, you know, significantly reduced, just because we've improved the underlying CM client so much in 2012.
My time?
Yep.
All right. You stole my thunder a little bit, but it's okay.
You can return serve if you want to.
Okay.
Yes.
So Mark actually showed you a lot of console improvements that we have done. And the theme that I'm going to talk about is simplified administration. How have we simplified and operationalized the way you can manage endpoint protection? The key here was, even when we were thinking of forefront endpoint protection, the key was to operationalize the management, meaning the day-to-day operations have to be simple. And that's why we had the integration with Configuration Manager. So the desktop admin who's doing those day-to-day updates to the client can also manage the endpoint protection part of it. And then the security team can think of bigger issues, end-to-end security policies, those kind of things. So in the console itself, obviously you saw that dashboard is now fully integrated with Configuration Manager. And I will show you in a bit the way we do quick remediation, quick understanding of the threats out there. So in that dashboard, you'll be able to see what your threat area is in your enterprise, what's happening in real time on the clients, and be able to remediate those things quickly. And the last thing that I want to talk about here is role-based administration. So this is net new. Those who already are familiar with Configuration Manager 2012 will know that this was a big improvement, that we now support role-based administration for the entire Config Manager interface. So you can have different roles. One role for software updates, one role for central administration, and one role for endpoint protection. And that endpoint protection admin role will only get access and only get visibility into endpoint protection related policies or reports and those kind of things. So it's pretty intelligent the way we do it. It's fully granular, so an admin can go in and check what the user or what the endpoint admin can see as well, but there is also an out-of-the-box endpoint administrator role that you can select. So very easy to do that. Next thing is about monitoring client security. Again, extremely important and a way improved feature in 2012. But first of all, it uses that high-speed channel from Configuration Manager. And the reason why we use that high-speed channel is you'll be able to get data, you'll be able to get alerts in real time. In Configuration Manager 2007, that was not possible. You had to wait. And so in 2012, with this high-speed data channel, the endpoint protection messages have high priority. And so you get all those endpoint protection alerts as well as notifications quickly in the console as well as through email. So another feature that we have included now is that you get alerts using email subscriptions. So, you know, the idea here is that you may not be on the console all the time. And if you want to have real-time notification, you could get those alerts through your emails as well. The next thing is about reporting and analysis and the visibility that you get out there. So we still use SQL reporting services, which is what we used in Feb 2010 as well. But we have more reports, more out-of-the-box reports for you. We have user-based reports, so you can have correlation between what a user is doing and you know, the malware infections that you have on those machines that the user has used. So there are a lot of granularity and a lot of details in those reports that you can get. We have a blog that actually talks about and gives you more details on how to customize your reports as well. So I encourage you to go to System Center blog and search for these reports, but you can now customize those reports as much as you want besides these out-of-the-box reports. So while we're talking about monitoring and real-time monitoring and management, let me show you the monitoring part of it. If what Mark has done has succeeded, then we should be able to go to the client and we should be able to simulate a threat and see that in this monitoring window. So no pressure, Mark. We'll see if it works.
You're tempting fate.
All right.
This is all pre-beta code, so we'll give it a roll.
All right. So let's see here. I have endpoint protection installed, and I have this simulator. We internally use it for testing purposes. It's not available outside. So I'm going to use that to create some threats so that they can be reported back to Configuration Manager console. So I'll go with full scan required threat. Now it says that a full scan required threat has been created, and the detected threat has been cleaned. So if it was too quick, I'll do it again. This is a threat created, and endpoint protection understood it and basically protected protected your machine from that threat. Now we have done that. We'll go back to the endpoint protection management console and see if we get that alert in there. All right, so before we go into the monitoring dashboard, let me create an alert and show you how easy it is to do that for our collection. So in this case, I'm going to go to device collections, and let me create an alert for all desktops there. All right, so this is the alert tab. I'm going to say view this collection, and I'm going to add endpoint protection alerts for this collection. It also gives me options to define the critical or severity level of these alerts. So I can say critical or warning or information. I'll just keep it at critical. I'll have those defaults just for our demo purposes. All right, so I've defined an alert. Let's go to the monitoring section and see if we're able to see any alerts here. So it takes a little time to, there you go. I see one alert. That was Configuration Manager baseline. Oh, there you go. So it took a second to generate that alert. This was the alert that we had generated or simulated on my client. So it worked, Mark. Nice work. I talked about subscriptions, so you can actually define email subscriptions from here as well. Once I have got that alert, I can also go to the endpoint protection dashboard. And let's look at any malware alerts if we have here. So I'm going to run that summarization. Now, the key here is that the alert, you got the alerts, you could see those alerts in real time. This dashboard is not going to give you everything that is real time. So you need to run summarization. And the key here is that you may not always be glued into this endpoint protection dashboard, but the alerts are important. That's why you can define subscription, email subscriptions, so you can get those in real time. So we'll give it a second. And what I wanted to show you really is once it comes up, everything here that you see is really actionable. And that's where the operationalization comes into picture. So I can, if I had some active clients at risk, I could go and click on this link, and it could actually show me the active clients that were really at risk. It could go into a collection and actually show me that device, and then I could go in and do some remediation as well. So let's go back to alerts, see what this alert says. I can create a subscription again, as I said here, and then I can also go to individual assets and see which of the devices had a problem. So I already know that Windows 8 client had an issue. There you go. So the magic threat had generated a lot of malware, and so I can see actual details of this malware if I go to this devices collection and actually go to that device itself. Basically, what it would have from the dashboard itself, it could have given me this link, and I could have come here and I could start the remediation. So I could go right-click on this device. I can go to endpoint protection, and I can start a full scan. I can I can force that machine to download a definition. So as you can see, the remediation part is very quick, and I can start the remediation from that same unified console of Configuration Manager. All right, there you go. So it just took a minute or so to show up here, but this is really what I wanted to show, that the malware detail showed up in the dashboard itself, and as I said, these are all actionable, so I could click here, and then I already showed you what I could do going from the going to the client.
Yeah, before you switch off, AJ, One of the other things that we did is go back to monitoring. Tell me if, when looking at that endpoint protection node, you can now scroll down on the left a little more. There's one other thing I'm not sure we told you about. Go to the left navigation pane.
Yep.
So one of the common questions we get from customers and other folks is, how can I see what is my top malware in my environment? With 2012, we made it like how AJ walked it through. It was very kind of device-centric. How do you have to basically find either the devices and then find the malware. And that became a little more cumbersome than what people wanted. So what we did is we just put a node right in the product so that you can actually see, here's all the current malware that I have had, let's say, in the last 7 days. And then from this, here, try right-clicking on that guy. You can take action on that malware right at your fingertips. So, for example, if you know that it's a threat that you're not so worried about, you can immediately exclude what that might be, or you can take other actions against those clients. So,
all right, thanks, Mark.
Yeah, this view I would need to double check. The reason that the dashboard requires summarization is because it has 7 or 8 different charts, and if we didn't make it reliant on summarization, every time you went to the node, it would take a while for all those queries to run. And so there's a technical reason. And then the other reason, scenario-wise, is that what AJ said before is we don't believe that, actually, how about this? We don't want administrators hanging out in the console all day long. If you want to be able to be, you know, if you have a real-time need to know of something bad happening, then our answer to that is alerts or, you know, email subscriptions for alerts, and that's what we optimize for. So that's why we feel pretty good about why running summarization isn't bad. And you don't really have to run summarization. It runs on a schedule, like every 15 minutes or something like that. It's just for demo purposes, you got to kick the thing off.
Can you repeat the question so people can hear?
Oh, I'm sorry. So the question was, does this particular threat dashboard, all up list rely on summarization? I don't really know. I would need to double check. But then I was going off of, why the concepts that we went into.
All right.
Yeah, that's a common question that we get, not just for endpoint protection, but just Config Manager alerts in general. The answer that we tend to get is really focus on who the persona is and how and the functionality that you can get out of that solution. So in the past, due to a lack of like email support, SCOM was a great answer for almost all scenarios. But what we've done not only with endpoint protection alerts in 2012, we've added email, but then in SP1 we've added email support for all Config Manager alerts. So now it becomes less of a functionality consideration. It really becomes more about who the personas are. So one of the things that we did with Configuration Manager, and we've tried to apply the same practices with endpoint protection, is that we don't want administrators having to leave the console to complete end-to-end scenarios. So we believe that we sort of owe the we have this responsibility to the customer and to these personas to make sure that you can complete all of your tasks with inside the Config Manager console. That's why our alerts are very scenario focused. They aren't focused so much on your server's running out of disk space, which may be applicable for a CM server, but those are more things that are in tune with an ops manager solution because of who the personas tend to be. And the personas tend to be more of that network operations staff and things like that.
All right, so I'm going to go back to my presentation and let Mark talk about what's new in upcoming Service Pack 1.
Okay, so I've kind of touched on a lot of the stuff. This is just a good kind of recap of where we're going is, again, auto deployment rules. You can run those 3 times a day. That'll work at full scale. Again, it's just about trying to not have any differences from our publishing standards. The other thing we did, too, to kind of make this work was we introduced kind of a concept of Delta Syncs. That way you can feel more confident if this is more applicable to people who use software updates that would know about this, is you can run these sync processes very frequently, and as a result, you won't have to worry about the load that might work inside of your infrastructure. Real-time actions, which we have a demo to do, which is a big finger cross moment because it's coming out in SP1. This is functionality that I know customers have asked a ton for throughout the years. It's sometimes referred to as the big green button. It's the ability from the console to say, I'd like this action to be performed. And as a result, it'll go out in real time. And by real time, we tend to mean within 5 minutes. It'll go out and interact with all your clients. One of the kind of guiding principles we have with these real-time actions is we don't want you to worry about it. We want you to be able to go into the console, be able to select an action across however many clients you might want to target it to, and we'll make sure that works correctly. And then the last piece I talked about before, it's that client-side merge of policy in SP1. That affords you an opportunity to really kind of simplify your policies that you have in place. So what I'm going to do is kind of walk you through what we mean by, how the real-time action thing works, and I'll use a phone analogy that's just about correct. So what happens is the client maintains what we consider a dial tone back to the server, and what it's doing is it's really just waiting for a call to be placed. So you can kind of the analogy here would be to think of the server and the MP as being like a PBX. It's waiting for a call to be placed. What the administrator does is they're the ones who places the call. They basically says, I'd like to run a full scan, a quick scan, those actions that AJ showed you. What happens is that, a call has been then, registered, if you will, on the server, and the client picks up that call. And the client is using a very lightweight TCP connection, thus the reason we're engineering it so you guys don't have to worry about scale of, you know, of being able to manage this. We want you to be able to just not worry about it, be able to deploy these actions or use these actions without having to worry about any infrastructure load that goes on. So what happens is the client picks up the call, it processes that instruction, oh, need to run a full scan or a quick scan or whatever it might be, and, you know, voila, it works without a problem. And just to curse myself, I had to say it works without a problem. So what I'm going to show you how this, show you what this looks like. Let me first go down here to the client. Let's get EP loaded up. So it's orange because we were doing a prep of the demo and forgot to clear the state on it. So ignore the fact that it's orange. That's not really the point of the demo. The point of it is to probably focus here at when was the last time a quick scan was run. So what I'll do is I'll attempt to run that from the server. So there's again, with our console, there's kind of a myriad of ways to invoke actions. You can either do it directly to a machine. You could go to the dashboard like AJ described. So if you remember, what he did was he was on this dashboard, and then he's able to see, like, oh, full scan's required. That drills into the client that's impacted that needs the full scan. And then what you're able to do here is you're able to launch an action from the console. So I'll just do a quick scan just for the sake of time. So what that's going to do is it's going to kick off a quick scan on the client itself. And that should happen with about a minute or two. And that's kind of what we mean by real time. Why that's going on, a couple things to kind of show you, is we record all of these client operations. You can tell we've been preparing for the demo because we've done this multiple times before. But what it's doing is it's created, in essence, like a job in the system. And it's basically, here, let me sort by time, sorry. It creates, in essence, like a job in the system. That way you can kind of track to see how well that action has been going. So picture this run against all systems. You know, you might have 100,000 machines and you want to run this off to. You can come back here to be able to understand how that task has been run across all of those different clients, because not all clients will be online at the same time. So this is the view where you can kind of get an overall status check of, wait, I set that task to be run, has it been completed or not? This is where you can kind of come back and see that. And then, of course, what you can do is you can actually go back here to the dashboard, and what you'll see is that these numbers will go down. You know, after I complete the full scan or a reboot or whatever that action might be, you'll see these numbers go down as well. All right, so let me go check out the client. Oh, good, so it's running a quick scan. That's great. That thing happened much faster than I actually thought it would be, so that's wonderful. So again, these actions just, you know, will kick off in, you know, near real time across a myriad of clients. All right. Ready?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's talk about enhanced protection and improvements, as well as the end-to-end comprehensive security that we provide with this protection engine. This is an eye chart, but it's really important to understand what we, you know, seriously, I mean, it's an eye chart, but the importance is that we provide end-to-end protection, multi-layered protection. Some people call it defense in depth. But remember, when I was initially talking about multiple personas, people having a drive-by download threats, people targeting social networks, there are various types of malware at various levels, and you want to make sure that you are protected. So the way we, Microsoft, provide that protection is A, through fundamental security in the operating system itself. So as you can see here, you have a lot of operating system features that will provide you protection. And this is for Windows 7. Obviously, we'll have more security built in with Windows 8. So apart from that operating system features and functionalities that provide security, you also have, on top of that, endpoint protection, system center endpoint protection. So let's talk about the security features included in System Center Endpoint Protection. The first one, at the network level, you are able to consolidate your firewall management into the Configuration Manager console itself. So Endpoint Protection Dashboard, you're able to define policies for the Endpoint Protection engine itself, as well as Windows Firewall. The next one, at the file system level, is that we have an anti-malware and anti-rootkit defense system for you in that engine. And at the same time, we have dynamic translation and emulation. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more, but those are the proactive technologies, not just reactive signature-based technologies, but the proactive technologies where the engine has intelligence built in to defend against the newer threats that are coming up, or understanding the behavior of those applications and operating system and how it is changing it, and protecting you from even unknown threats that are coming up in the wild. And that is backed up by our online service. We call it Dynamic Signature Service, or the new name for that service in the product is Microsoft Active Protection Service. That will provide you in the cloud service that can provide updates, signature updates in near real time, so that your clients are updated as well as protected from suspicious behavior of some malware threats. And of course, as Microsoft, we get a lot of telemetry, not just from endpoint protection, but also from other clients that we service through WSAS or through Windows Update. And so based on that, we have a global team of researchers providing input into this security technology, security strategy. So let's talk about dynamic translation. This is our technology that uses heuristics. That's built in to the engine. You'll be able to get benefit from this proactive type of detection. Basically, it's able to emulate what the program or what the application is going to do, but it uses virtualized resources. That means unless and until that application is verified, you will not be exposed with the real resources. If it's suspicious behavior, if it's not, you know, a known malware based on heuristics detection, it will block that file. And the way we do it is also faster. So it's, you know, we have our own way of doing heuristic scanning, and we are able to detect that quite quickly without impacting the performance. How many of you have used or aware of Microsoft Security Essentials? Quite a few of you. That's great. One of the popular feedback that we receive from Microsoft Security Essentials is that it just does its job. It, you know, it's there. It doesn't impact my performance, and that's great for us. That's one of the things we are able to do it is because of this dynamic translation. We are able to scan the virtual resources faster. The second thing is about behavior monitoring. Let's say you have. I'm just giving one example. You have a Trojan, which is not, you know, that in itself is not a virus or malware, but it's actually carrying a payload that is a malware and comes on your client. You have endpoint protection there. So because that Trojan itself is not a known malware, that might be executed on the client. And when it tries to drop that malware, endpoint protection will say, oh, this is a malware, we should block it. But what happens to this Trojan program itself? So we are able to understand the behavior of the system. We have multiple sensors across the system at a file level, at the network level, and we're able to understand what's happening in the system. Is the system changing its behavior? Is the program changing the behavior? And based on those sensors, with this Microsoft Active Protection Service, we are able to dial back home in the cloud. Right? So using that service, we say, okay, this seems to be suspicious. Can we go and check in your cloud to see if you know anything latest about this threat? And if we do, if Microsoft has latest signature or latest pattern based on this new threat, we are able to dynamically push that update to the client. So in this case, the client doesn't have to wait for the signature update coming from WSAS, Windows Update, but can dynamically get updated. So now, you know, that program itself can be shut down. The Trojan program itself can shut down. So that's the benefit of Microsoft Active Protection Service. It's a real-time service. In forefront days, it was called SpyNet. We don't know why, looking at SpyNet, people didn't sign up. But now, you should really consider it because, frankly, it really, A, it also helps you to minimize false positives. In any case, Microsoft's false positive rates have been traditionally extremely low, but even you using this service can give us good telemetry data to understand what is a real threat, what is not a real threat. And second thing is you can dynamically get those updates so that your clients are secure. And I talked about Microsoft Security Essentials, and I'm going to let Mark talk more about how we protect clients and the client-side technology. But I just want to make one quick comment on the performance itself. As you can see, the client is, it uses the same engine that Microsoft Security Essentials uses. And so the performance hit that we have on the client is minimal. We have made sure that your users are not bothered when the scans are happening, or the users have less impact for our endpoint protection. And then you can do a few things like CPU throttling during scans. So that can be done through a policy. And you can do other, you know, we have done other things like advanced caching that maintains higher speed of scanning as well. And I'll let Mark talk more about client side of things.
Oh, sure, thanks. So as AJ said, you know, one of the big sort of things we pride ourselves on is just making sure that as we deliver new security capabilities, that the end user isn't impacted. For the vast majority of end users, they just want to be secure. They just don't want to be, you know, bothered with something that isn't in their normal path of trying to do their day-to-day job. So as kind of AJ alluded to, that's really what we're trying to show here. And the other thing, too, that we take, you know, a fair level of pride in is that we recently won the award for sort of best usability, and that's really specifically around our way in which we manage the end user usability. So as we try to focus on not only protecting the actual clients themselves, we do put a ton of time into making sure we're providing an end user experience that is acceptable. Trying to you know, make sure we have the right ability for the administrator to, let's say, suppress notifications, suppress you know, chattiness of the client itself, be able to make sure we ship it with certain defaults that also adhere to that nature. We believe is very important, you know, it's just so that you don't get a, you know, very, very sort of violent pushback from your end user base, or even have things where they can cause unnecessary help desk calls. You know, you get a little pop-up that the end user can't do anything about, can unnecessarily cause a lot of issues as well. On the next slide here, what I was going to talk about was just that we now in SP1 will support some new heterogeneous platforms, so specifically Linux and Mac OS. Hopefully this still works. So what I wanted to show you was the...
While you're doing that, let me ask a question. How many of you need protection for your Mac and Linux? Awesome. Okay. We have a solution for you.
I hope it's Mac, because that's the only one I brought. So what we have is a client, this is what it looks like. A lot of the same similar functionalities that you would get with the endpoint client itself if you're used to launching that, you know, that UI on the client side. You're able to see at a glance what your protection status is. You can force definition updates. You have certain controls that the end user is allowed to configure as well. And, you know, I think we're excited for this, too, because it really provides a nice, comprehensive, single vendor story for you in order to secure your, you know, Mac and Linux clients, and then as well as your Windows population as well. So it's a nice way to just kind of have it all delivered through a single product offering, which is great. Okay, cut back here. So did you want to kind of do the summary here? Put
sure.
You on the spot?
Yeah.
I'll see what you missed.
All right, so in terms of, you know, you can see the chart. I think it will be useful for you, for those who are already having forefront endpoint protection, to understand what is new, what we have enhanced, and what is, you know, taken, or what is similar to forefront endpoint protection. So I talked about firewall management, proactive protection, the engine itself. So one of the things that we do is engine is updated every month, and so we don't have to wait to provide any enhancements in the protection side of it for a new release to happen, right? So for example, you don't have to wait for System Center 2012 endpoint protection to come out to get newer threats or newer enhancements in the protection engine itself. We are able to service that regardless of what version of endpoint protection you're using. That's one. So we are using similar engine, but you still constantly get updates and enhancements there. Role-based administration is obviously new. It was a much requested feature from a lot of customers like you. So you are able to now define different roles, as I talked about. Alerts and monitoring. There were monitoring features in Feb 2010, but in 2012, as you saw, we have now enabled real-time alerts. And finally, on the server setup, which is the biggest change that we have, no longer do you have to install any additional things on the server. Once you start installation of System Center 2012 Configuration Manager, you will get an endpoint protection role. So it's just a matter of enabling that endpoint protection role to start protecting your clients. So it's a unified setup. And of course, as Mark actually showed you, the client deployment, which again is a big pain to deploy antivirus clients or take out your existing clients, replace them. That's a big pain. We understand that. And so we have, in fact, simplified it further than what it was in Feb 2010. As Mark said, we actually are now able to deploy the installable along with the config manager client itself. So the moment you select manage endpoint on the server side, the installation starts on the client. So there is no separate deployment mechanism for endpoint protection client. So in a nutshell, we have done a lot of work on simplifying the endpoint protection experience for you further. And I hope that will be useful for you guys. So at this time, I think we'll, if you have any questions.
Sure, and one other thing to highlight is that we know we still got some ways to go. As a result, we're fairly active in trying to, blog certain scenarios that may not be either super obvious when you first use the product, or maybe it's something we're looking to do more natively in the product in the future. Like one of the things when you get into sort of that defense in depth scenarios, you're really talking about how you can leverage different capabilities that Config Manager has to be able to provide a configuration management solution for all those different tiers of protection. So like the top one's a great example of that. How can you remediate clients that require an offline scan? So the answer is you can leverage Config Manager's ability to deploy operating system deployments to be able to kick a device into WinPE mode and then run the Windows Defender offline scan. So we've written blogs on how to tackle that scenario. Not the most complicated, but it may not be like right in your, right up there that you can see in the console. And then as we sort of iterate through solutions, we'll try to, do a better job making the in-console experience better. But the point being here is that we love feedback. Come up and talk to us. We may have some documentation that helps in the short term, or if you got other scenarios. Really, I think the thing that we're trying to do too is help foster a community around endpoint protection. Config Manager has a long-standing community, and we want to try to get that same momentum going with endpoint protection so that, as sort of a collected group of people, we can really kind of come together and get kind of the near term taken care of as the product goes through this evolution path.
And one thing I would like to add is we talked a lot about Service Pack 1 today, and that Service Pack 1, as a customer technology preview, will be made available to you this week. So that's coming up. You can test it. Give us your feedback. So with that, if you have any questions, we'd love to take questions.
So are you specifically looking for the question I need to clarify. So is it you want your clients to get updated directly from the internet, or is it a statement of I'd like my WSUS or my server based parts to be upgraded directly from the internet? What's that?
The server based parts. Our downstream servers right now only get catalog updates on our main WSUS server.
Yep.
Use the
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can do that. I need to double check because you end up in the topology wise, you end up with one sort of active subrel, but I'm pretty sure you can specify for a sup that you want to get content from the internet. But okay, good enough head nodding that that's possible. But I would need to crack open the UI to take a look, but I can follow up with you afterwards. Yep. Yeah, if the question was, how do you set up subscriptions for alerts, and how can you make it so that certain alerts go to one set of users and another one goes to another set of users, that's accomplished as you define the subscription. So with the subscription, you're able to be able to say, these are the alerts, and I want them to go to these email addresses.
So where in the product?
Oh, it's in the alert node. If you remember when AJ did his demo, it was where you have a node that's called alerts, and then there's a subscription child node there where you can set that up.
And you point it like at a certain collection, or you point it towards the
calls? It's assigned more at the alert to email association, not to like an anti-malware policy or something like that. So you basically say, I would like malware detection alerts to be assigned there. Yeah. Do you want to pop it open?
Trying to.
It's easier to show you, sorry.
Yeah, because yeah. You can get malware on both the server and a client side of the web. I don't care about
that. Oh, yeah, you're able to do the filtering, but let me see if we can just show you real quick. You'll put us demo, make us do ad hoc demos. That's a challenge. So go to. So what you would do is part of your the one thing to maybe remember from when he did his demo was that you define an alert relative to a collection. So you can very well have two alerts that are both for detected malware, one from all desktops and one from all servers. So if you want to subscribe to just server, sorry if I got my hands mixed up, but if you want to subscribe just to malware detected on servers, you would select that alert right here. And you can kind of make it out. See how they have the collection at the very end here? That's so what you imagine two almost identical entries being here, one for desktops and one for servers. And I'm pretty sure RBA works. I would be surprised if it didn't. Role-based administration works for all of this. So depending on your rights, you may not even see the desktop one. You may only see the server one. Okay. Oh, yeah. You want it?
Go ahead.
Oh, so the question was the Mac and or maybe just Linux agents, how that works, and whether that's going to be something that is managed, like you could get your signature files through Config Manager. As it sits right now, well, that's not good. As it sits right now, sorry, that's going to really worry me. Ah, good. Okay, so as it sits right now, the Mac client and the Linux client are not fully integrated into Configuration Manager. So they get their policies from a cloud management service, and then they also, but they can be deployed through Configuration Manager. That's what I meant by they're not fully managed. So if you had attended the CM overview, we went over how we now have a native Mac client for Configuration Manager, and it can do things like software distribution. So you can use software distribution to deploy your Mac agent if you want to, but we don't have nearly the level of integration that we have. You can almost think of what we did for Mac and Linux as like a V1, where it is very similar to FEP 2010. You know, a lot of the same things you might have to do to support Mac is somewhat analogous there. Does that answer your question, or I completely miss it? Okay, good.
Yeah.
So even though it's the no impact on the computer device, we often had a problem with some servers with the real-time scan. There's no real good way to see what the real-time scan effect is doing. Can you elaborate on that? Has that been improved, or?
Your turn.
Sure. So I don't know the answer that what we can do for you. Maybe we can check the logs. But fundamentally, for servers, We do have out of the box best practice policies that you can use. So for example, Exchange. We have a template for Exchange that will give you the best policy, best performance for that Exchange server. So I don't know if you use that. If you use that, that might give you a better, you know, better scanning performance.
So specifically, like on your particular question, just to maybe set some context, there's the way we engineer the product. There's a set of people who really work on the core engine, and then there's people like me who work on how do you manage it, deploy it, build a product around it. The good news is, if you got time, go down to the booth area, and there's two people here from our core AM team, and they might be able to really answer some of those real tough internal anti-malware scenarios, because AJ and I know about certain settings you can do, like randomization and, you know, certain policies that can be applied and tweaks that you can make. But it kind of sounds like from your question you may have exhausted those options, and if that's the case, then I'd defer you to the booth area. And you know, there might be three people down there that can probably give you a more in-depth answer than we could. Yeah, the question was just around operating system deployment changes in Configuration Manager in 2012. We haven't specifically optimized or provided any new scenarios for servers. I know that MDT has some capabilities out of box that kind of help with that, so I just don't know exactly what they've released. They may have done something in that area, but just in general, our focus with 2012 was just not for server scenarios, so you probably won't notice too much of a difference there. Yes, yeah, so the question was a scenario. Let's say I have Exchange servers and a Config Manager server. Sorry, I forgot the other one. And let's say I want to have two separate exclusions because they're two different server products that need to run differently. In GA, the general availability release that came out in April, what you have to do is you have to create two new policies. And the policies end up being, you know, duplication of all your settings except for exclusions. You know, like, I don't know, you exclude certain components. What you then do is you take these two policies and you deploy one to a collection called Config Manager servers, where you've built the logic to have CM servers, and then the other one you do to Exchange servers. In SP1, the story's a bit better in that you don't have to create two separate policies that duplicate one another except for exclusions. You actually just have one base policy, and then what you can do is create just an exclusion only policy that's relevant for Config Manager server as well as the Exchange server. Because in general, most people have a fairly consistent base thing that they want to apply in a server environment. So you'd likely have like a server base, and then you'd have Config Manager servers, but then the Config Manager server is likely just the exclusions. Does that make sense?
Yep.
But the same mechanics apply. Once you define your policies, you assign them to a collection, and then off we go to apply them. The other thing, too, we do as well is we end up merging the policies together, so you don't have to necessarily have them be mutually exclusive. We can actually layer them together, so you could get into layering scenarios if you wanted to as well. Yeah, so the question was whether I could read minds, and it is. So, but his real question was whether you can have, what's kind of the best practice where you have servers with multiple, you know, sort of functional roles, if you will. Definitely going forward, our message is to just have, I call them thin slices. You know, have like just a small policy that's relevant just for DNS or just for Config Manager, just for a domain controller. And just have those be very specific to those individual roles. And then if you have a co-located server, just apply them all and let the client merge them all together for you. It doesn't hurt performance. It doesn't do anything like that. Basically, the way our client works is we get all these policies before applying anything, and then we look at the set. And then what we do is we look at whether we can merge them. Like exclusions, we can merge because it's just anding together a bunch of strings, if you will. But if you have certain settings that are mutually exclusive, you know, like a yes-no value, then we have a priority mechanism where we can do a tie break. But typically, when people, like, you know, for these server scenarios, it's usually more around exclusions or things that you can actually merge together. So if you can just create these thin slices and just put them all down on the client, before applying the final policy, will just go through a reconciliation process where it merges it into one thing and applies it to the client. So it has no impact. It's trivial. It's simple. We do the same thing with our client agent settings. Like, we've been doing this for client agent settings for, you know, in what you see there as part of our GA release. We've done it to scale with, you know, hundreds of thousands of machines. Not a problem.
Any other questions? Oh, there. Yep.
What were you thinking? We've kind of investigated what to do in the future, so we know that's an ask, and actually that's why I was asking. The answer is no, we currently don't have any firm plans to add in. Sorry, the question was, are you going to add in more device types? The answer as it sits right now is no, there are no firm plans. It's definitely an area that we are investigating, and that's kind of why I was asking the question, if there was sort of this, you know, kind of top set of additional cross-plat scenarios or even, you know, device scenarios that you wanted protection off of. So it's mainly like mobile device. Are you thinking just in terms of like phones, or is it a tablet, or what's the particular? Okay, all right. So the answer, unfortunately, is no right now, but it's good information for us to have as we sort of prioritize what to do next.
Okay.
Oh, there's one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just to kind of capture the question for the room and online, it's the question was really, how fast will the endpoint protection client be installed after the admin says to go and install it? Unfortunately, the answer is a little tricky. In terms of how quickly the policy takes effect, it's going to take effect based off of standard machine polling interval, which is 60 minutes by default. So it could take 1 minute, it could take 60 minutes. It just depends on where that particular client is in terms of requesting new policy. So the screen I kind of maximized here is the second you say yes, install the endpoint protection client, it could take anywhere from 0 to 60 minutes for that to occur. There are some additional controls like the one that's grayed out there. You know, the end user, we do afford some options where if the end user needs to have the ability to postpone, there's some things that you can do there as well. But I think the tricky thing is for your particular scenario is that it's not always just a mechanics issue, like, you know, how quickly can we get policy down there and tell the client to install it. It also can be that there are clients that just aren't on the network right now. So even though you want the client to be installed, you know, maybe there's machines that are just not connected to the network at that point in time. So the way we solve that scenario is we come over here to the monitoring dashboard, and that's where we put a ton of time into this guy, which is really your dashboard for the endpoint administrator, so that they can understand, oh, I've targeted a policy to this collection that says it should have the endpoint client. And then they can tell here, you know, how complete that deployment is. You know, it'll start with obviously zero, because the second you apply it, nothing's been applied. But over the course of 60 minutes, they'll likely see this go fairly high in the green category. And then over the course of a few days, as more and more clients come back from vacation or the weekend or something like that, then they'll get the client installed. And then hopefully your net success goes close to 100%. Does that make sense? Oh, okay. Yeah, so one of the advantages that we get by implementing real-time actions in SP1, that's that ability like I showed to run a quick scan, is we actually produce a report that tells you at a given time that you're running this report, how many clients are currently online. So our system now understands not just how many are online within a given period of time, like we do with client health. We can now tell near instantly, you know, within 5 minutes of running an action and having state come back, we can tell how many clients are online. So what you might be able to do is you might be able to tell your FEP admin, hey, this is how I'm going to set your expectations. Go to this report, and this will tell you right now how many are online. And it's going to be not 100,000, it's going to be like 60,000. Then what they can do is deploy the endpoint client out, and then they should feel pretty confident that they're going to hit 60,000. And that might be a way to set expectations. But it's just a general how do you set expectation problem. I just remember in the past when I was on the user side of the product that was always a challenge with software updates, the same scenario you're talking about. You know, upper management wanted to be compliant on, you know, time zero, but it just never worked out that way. So you had to sort of focus on how do you provide the right expectations. So maybe with SP1, with these real-time actions, it'll provide a new channel for that. Yep.
Hey, one question, Mark.
Oh, yeah. They do not when you first install it. There's a separate web download, and then when you download it, I forget how it installs. I can't remember if we like create a package or an app for them or something like that. I don't know if we do that, but The things that you'll see integrated aren't necessarily the client by default. What you'll see is things like, and I know this is an endpoint session, but what you'll see is like in our application management feature, you'll see a deployment type for Mac. So we have some things that are native out of box, but literally the client binaries, you have to go download them from the web, which is pretty easy to do. You just download, get a package, and you're done.
All right, guys, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your questions and interaction. And if you have any more questions, come see us. We're here.
Thanks.
Thanks.